Welcome to the Screen the Screener College Basketball Podcast with your hosts, Mike Randall and Gus Kearns.
Welcome and thank you, as always, for tuning into the Screen the Screener College Basketball Podcast, where we're always talking everything college hoops. Thanks to Block Talk Radio for powering us up. Thanks to Bell Jar for bringing us in and out. And thanks to you, the listeners out there, for tuning in, carving out some time. You could have been anywhere else on the dial. You chose to be here with us, Mike and Gus. We appreciate that. And Mike, as we like to say, it's been a long time. Let's do this college basketball thing. How are you?
Oh, buddy, I'm back, man. I'm so excited. Had time.
Thank goodness.
I'm so excited. I'm back. I am totally back. Folks, I will not be away again for the summer. We did two separate weeks down the shore. I was with the family this week. Gus, I did a million things. A lot of sun, a lot of sun block. As you know, that seems to be an issue with me and pale.
Right.
We learned, did you ever hear this HQ Trivia app that's on the phone? HQ Trivia?
No. Educate me, please.
So basically it's free. You sign up and then at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m., there are these questions that pop up. It's a multiple choice question. It's a live quiz show. So your app, you click on your app and there's a person talking there. Anyone can play. And then whoever's left at the end of the eight questions splits the prize money through PayPal, $5,000, $1,000. Now, Gus, please. Okay. There's like 1,000 people left at the end. So you're making a dollar. Okay. Or maybe 80 cents, right? Like the people that are left at the end of the eight, if you get one wrong.
It's the excitement of the challenge.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a sports one. Okay. And I'm going somewhere with this and please give me a minute. Folks, I'm back. I'm ready to talk. Okay. So hang on.
Okay. Yes,
so
please go.
The sports one is in and I'm debating with my two cousins, Brian and Jerry, who I'm down there with. And they're like, if we get a basketball one, you're running the table. If we get a basketball one, you're running the table. Okay.
By the way, love cousin Brian, cousin Jerry.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So they're ready to go. They're like, you know, Mike can't get baseball. You wouldn't know it. They go, but if you get, you know, basketball, we're going to you. Fine. They're playing at their shore house. I'm nine blocks down the road playing. I'm on. You can see that your friends are on. Okay.
Okay.
Here's the question. Which player led the NBA with the highest percentage of rebounds in a season ever? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Dennis Rodman, or Wilt Chamberlain? Now, before you answer, I want you to know you have 10 seconds. So you cannot Google this, okay? Because you have 10 seconds or it locks you out.
I like the option where you can't Google it.
You
I
cannot
very
Google.
Much enjoy
it. A highest percentage of rebounds in a single season by a player. Kareem, Dennis Rodman, Wilt.
I would pick Wilt.
You just made me feel good. I picked Wilt Chamberlain because, as we know, Gus, he had like multiple seasons over 20 rebounds. Evidently, correct. The answer was Dennis Rodman, and the rationale given was they'd missed more shots then in the olden days. So even though Wilt averaged 29 rebounds a game, I looked it up, there were so many missed shots that he didn't have the highest percentage of rebounds of the season. So that's what I did down the shore. Got the basketball. I was ridiculed by Brian. You have a podcast. How did you not get this right? Okay. But I guess right. If you look up the most rebounds in a year, I mean, it's dominated by Wilt Chamberlain. Robin is in the top 35 in rebounds per game. But highest percentage of the rebounds, of all rebounds in that season, the answer is Dennis Rodman. HQ, Gus, try it. A lot of fun.
Tell us what you think. What would have you answered in that particular scenario? Would have you went, possibly the GOAT, Kareem? Would you gone the rebounding king and Dennis Rodman, the recent rebounding king? Or would you go one of the greatest players of all time who scored 100 points in a game? Would you go Wilt?
But, you know, Gus, as you go on, the questions get harder. You know, it's not the answer.
Yeah,
it's just like
question
three. So I'm like, it's got to be Will. They wouldn't put Rodman in question three. Sure they would. See you later. I got the big X.
Listeners, let us know what you would answer out there. Hit us up at Twitter, at SES Podcast, on Twitter, of course. And if you'd like to Gmail us what you think, please do sespodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to interact with you that way as well. If you wanted to, like, ridicule Mike or myself for answering, Will Chamberlain in a rebounding question, please hit up Mike at Randall Rant, of course. So go on. I'm sorry.
Really quick, folks, we're going to get to a lot of college basketball. I'm sorry. I got one more thing, but we're back on vacation here. I'm with my best friend. I got to talk a little bit. Here we go. Gus, one more. You're a big triathlon guy. You're a big Tour de France guy. I know you were watching it. This was a question also. Which country has the second most career Tour de France winners? Which country? I'll give you the options.
Wow.
Which country has the second most winners? USA, Belgium, France. 10 seconds.
Belgium.
Very good. I knew you'd get it right.
Okay. Very good.
Of course, I answered USA because I'm an idiot, and that's the idiot answer, right? But of course, Gus, it's not USA because a lot of them have been disqualified, right? So it's Belgium. And I'm sitting there as the clock's counting down. I'm going, who's answering Belgium? That's why you should answer Belgium.
Yeah.
Right?
Good.
So well done, my friend. Very good. Excellent job. Belgium. Excellent.
And as much as the host country, it's the most iconic bike race every year. Very rarely do we have a French rider up for the GC, and very rarely do we have a French rider up for a stage win. And when there is, it's a big hubbub. And especially on Bastille Day, you love to see a French rider get up for that day and put out a big effort that day. Yeah, France, I think, is like the dummy answer there, isn't it?
It is. It definitely is. Folks, sign up for HQ Trivia. It's a lot of fun. If you sign up, shameless plug, and you type in that you were referred by LBI Randall, okay, that's R-A-N-D-L-E, I get an extra life. I get an extra life. So feel free. HQ Trivia.
Question?
Yes, if you type, when you sign up your name, it says below, did you have a referral? If you type in LBIRANDLE, I get an extra life. And Gus, the way I'm playing, I certainly need them.
All right, let's get to some college basketball.
Yeah, sorry, here we go. So Gus, I did do some college basketball work down the shore. Very excited. I'm refreshed and replenished here. So what I thought I'd do is I grabbed who seems to be the top 10 teams by most of the rankings. And what I'm going to throw at you is I'm going to go right down from 1 to 10. And again, there may be some teams that you would have put in the top 10 that aren't here. But just we'll start with these, and certainly we'll come back to this in future weeks. I'm going to give you what I think is the key question, okay, for the season. Sort of the unknown, the guiding question. This is the defining question as to how this team is going to do. And then I'd like to hear your answer to the question, to be perfectly honest, okay? So top 10, way too early, of course, but the recruits are there. We're set to go. College basketball teams, here we go. First team I'll start with, Gus, is Kentucky. Now, you can put Kentucky, you can put Nevada, you can put Gonzaga, you can put Duke, you can put Kansas, right? I get that. But I'm just going to start with Kentucky because most of the polls have Kentucky up top.
Okay.
They got two of their top five scorers back. That's PJ Washington. Remember him, Gus? I was very excited about him declaring for the draft because I thought maybe he would maybe be drafted 50th overall.
You just leave him alone and let him play college basketball?
I'm sorry. I apologize. There's a place for there's a place for a guy with 6 points and six rebounds. There really is.
And that place is in the Wildcat lineup this year.
Well done. And Quade Green are back. Okay. And they got they went to the Sweet 16 last year. We know that. So they got graduate transfer Reed Travis from Stanford. He's come over. He doesn't have to sit. He's a graduate transfer. You talked about this in one of your pods. And they have the nation's number two recruiting class, which certainly got better in June because they got the five-star point guard. And you know my thoughts on five stars, okay? But he is a five-star point guard, Ashton Hagans, who has reclassified.
Hagans was a big get, right.
And he's set to enroll. So it looks, Gus, with Reed Travis coming over as a dominant big man inside, that they are more balanced and they're ready to go. So my question to you is Reed Travis going to be the cheat code for a second John Calipari championship?
Wow, cheat code, great terminology.
Thank you.
And how about this? I think it's the cheat code for him to get back to the Final Four.
Okay, good.
Now, whether it's the cheat code for another national championship, I think that's up for debate depending on the matchups. But I think having a veteran like Reed Travis, who's already had, like you like to say, sustained success at the college basketball level, in a big conference against big time competition, I think that provides exactly what Calipari has been missing since that Cat team. Since they went undefeated 38-0 into that Wisconsin game, he had top level talent there. But I think Reed Travis is the part that he's been missing. And if you go back and look at those great Kentucky teams, they've always had a veteran presence on that team as one of the leading scorers, or at least one of the voices in the locker room. Now that's the key voice in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Is Reed Travis's voice in the locker room, on the bench, on the practice floor going to be? How much weight is it going to carry? Is it going to be similar to other freshmen that have come into Kentucky and hold the same amount of weight? Or is it going to carry more gravity because he's been through the wars on the other coast at Stanford? And he's known how to win, and he's been through the battles. I'm going to go with the latter. I think that his voice and his presence is going to have a greater effect on this team than we might even think, like, just on the surface. Now, we can throw in, you know, Montgomery, who's going to be a big inside. Talked about Hagans, who's going to be the point guard. They got the wing Johnson. They have Quigley, who's going to be a guard who can shoot a little bit from outside. You talked about Washington coming back and Quade Green helping run the show. So they do have this unbelievable, nice rotation in place already. And let's say somebody like a wild card, right? Let's say somebody like Tyler Herro, like, just comes in and can make some threes. Then you're looking at a nine-man rotation that can get to the Final Four. And if you remember, the number one pick in this last year's NBA draft, DeAndre Ayton, when he was asked during the season, like, hey, who's been one of the toughest matchups that you had? You know what his answer was? It was Reed Travis. He said, Reed Travis
That's
is one
correct.
Of the yep. strongest guys I've played against all season. So Reed Travis is not going to get pushed around in the SEC. He's not going to get pushed around on the East Coast. And guess what? He's going to value this opportunity because he has not visited the NCAA tournament during his time at Stanford, and he is going to really value this opportunity as a Wildcat to find team success, not individual success.
I think that this year, what was missing from Kentucky was exactly that, was the pecking order, mm-hmm. was the leadership. Now, in 2014, 2015, they had an incredible year. Aaron Harrison was still there, the Harrison brothers, so they were looked at yep. as sort of the leaders. Now, they had a tremendous amount of success the year before as well. I think they got to the finals and lost, right? I think they lost in the finals to UConn, something like that.
Yep,
right?
Yep, yeah, they lost right. that UConn team.
So Devin Booker was there, but he only played 21 minutes. So what you had, if you look at their roster, they have the Harrison brothers who were 11-9 a game. Karl Anthony Towns was 10 points a game, but everybody was playing 20 minutes, right? Willie Cauley-Stein was there. But you kind of knew the Harrison brothers were the ones who had to take the most shots in the regular season. But then as you got to the postseason, things evolved. In that run that they had after they won, they played the conference tournament against Arkansas. They won. He had 21 against Hampton in the first round, Karl Anthony Towns. He had 8 against Cincinnati. They absolutely blew West Virginia's doors off. You remember that game? They destroyed West Virginia from the start. Yep. He had only had 1 point because they were up by so much. Notre Dame, big game, 25 points for Karl Anthony Towns. Wisconsin in the game they lost in the Final Four, 16-9. So Reed Travis could really get them off to a great start. Because you won't have what happened this past year with the, well, Knox had a couple of good games, and then Diallo was supposed to be the best player coming back because he almost got drafted, but he wasn't
Great
good.
Point.
And then when you
good
get,
point.
So right off the bat, it's going to be Reed Travis.
Right.
I expect Reed, if you could bet over-unders, and betting is now legal, Gus, if you could bet over-unders on how many points Reed Travis is scoring earlier in the year, it's going to be a lot, but it allows the players to develop and then they get into their role. And listen, this is a nice move here by Cal because he's got a pecking order and it's not going to be, well, Knox is better than Gildas Alexander, who thinks Washington's better than him. But then there's Diallo and Quade Green and Jared Vanderbilt gets a rebound a game, right? Like, or a minute, sorry.
We waited all season for Knox and Gildas Alexander to pop. And during that waiting period, there were some ugly warts. Reed Travis is going to like eliminate those ugly warts early on and make it seem a smoother transition from front to back for the season for the Wildcats. And I think you're right. I think when we get to the end of the season, I think some of those freshmen, like you mentioned, like Hagans, maybe throw Johnson into that equation as well.
Yep.
When those guys start to pop, and then you still have Green and Washington as, you know, quote unquote vets
Bingo,
that have been through the
yep.
wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense.
Second team we'll go to is the Jayhawks. I've talked about this on the private pod as well.
Yeah, well done.
Same with you, yeah. Quite possibly the best all-around roster top to bottom that Self's ever had. And we buried mm-hmm. Self. I'll be the first one to admit it. I buried him. I buried him last
right.
year. And like the thriller zombies, he came back
and
just stole.
Yeah, you were calling for it to happen,
well,
right?
Well done. Don't sleep on Kansas State this year. Oh, we'll get warmed up for that. But the issue is he's got the Lawson brothers who are eligible. Dedrick Lawson, he's already hyping as a possible Big 12 player of the year. So the Lawson brothers are there. He's got Quentin Grimes. He's got Devin Dotson. LeGerald Vick is actually back. He's got Azubuike back. But here's the issue, Gus.
Okay.
How will Self do with this plethora of talent? And more importantly, my question to you is he does not have a senior guard who was the Big 12 player of the year, Frank Mason, and then right. Devontae Graham. That is a big loss. We talked about guard play. We'll talk about guard play when we get to Gonzaga. Will yep. they boom, or will this be a struggle like Duke, where they have a plethora of talent, man, But whether it's Dotson or should it be Charlie Moore who transferred over, but, you know, Dotson's the highly ranked guard, are they going to hit some bumps? Even though last year when we all buried them and we thought that Kansas had no chance to win the Big 12 after Trey Young and then 50 boom. Points, but they had the point guard. And even though I sold Devontae Graham short, he was fantastic in the conference. I have no issue with that.
He was amazing.
But they don't have it this year. So what's going to happen with Kansas? Talk to me.
Great question, because I think if, as much as you mentioned Kentucky being number one, number two, or number three in other people's polls, and, you know, in our poll, both of these teams will be within the top five without question. I think that this team might have the biggest amount of talent, but then also the biggest question mark next to that talent, simply because it's unknown. It's not a known quantity. We don't know what the sum of the parts is yet.
Yep.
The parts all look awesome, right? You just mentioned all the parts. You know, Lawson Brothers. You got Charlie Moore coming over from Cal. You got the dynamic freshman backcourt of Dots and Grimes. And then you sneak in, like, Vic back in through the back door. And you got Azubuike as, like, your traditional seal-a-camp big that gets awesome paint touches that really helps your offense run. But the question is, how is Self going to integrate all of these parts that have never played a minute together on the floor? Never. He's had the crutch, much like UNC, which I think we'll get to later, of having a Joel Berry, or, and you mentioned them, Devontae Graham, Frank Mason, type of coach on the floor where he could just say, hey, I'm going to trust you to make a good decision. Let's go run our stuff. Is he really going to say that to Charlie Moore?
Right.
Is he going to say that to the backcourt of Dotson and Grimes?
Is Dotson going to pout if Charlie Moore starts?
Right. I don't know.
Right.
So here's my out-of-the-box solution. I think that maybe he might put the ball in Dedrick Lawson's hands because, much like we mentioned with Reed Travis, he's been through some of the wars at Memphis and has big-time experience averaging over 20 points a game, being, you know, the front runner for, you know, being a first team all conference type player.
Yep.
Maybe he puts the ball in his hands as like a point forward and lets him make some decisions early on in the season and then allows the newcomer, which is Moore, and the freshman Dotson and Grimes to grow a little bit. And then maybe that's the way he does it, since he doesn't have the Frank Mason or the Devontae Graham to lean on. Maybe he leans on his transfer, who's been on the floor this whole past season, been on all the trips with him, got suspended on that one trip, but then also has run scout teams and has played against these guys the whole entire time and knows the system. So maybe he's gonna run a little point forward, tweak it a little more. You know, we've talked about like how Self tweaks his defenses during the NCAA tournament and throws the box in two. I'm sorry, the box in one and triangle in two and those all the junk defenses. Mm-hmm. Maybe he does that this time. So that's my out-of-the-box solution for Kansas possible success.
Well said. That's it. Listen, they're going to be good, folks. I'm going to tell you right now, Kansas is going to be very, very good. I'm not doubting
you. Wait, so you're on the bandwagon?
They're going to be good. Now, listen, Gus, okay. By the time we get to November, could I possibly predict them to lose the Big 12? It's possible. It's not likely, though. It's not likely.
Right.
I like Kansas State. They got a lot of people back. I love
Kansas State.
But could they hit some bumps? But yeah, here's the question. Kansas hitting bumps is what, 5 losses in conference, right? Like, it's still 13-5. You know, it's not like them
and
hitting
that,
buttons.
That can win you the conference.
And that can win the conference. Exactly right. that's my point. So even if
especially
they don't
in that conference.
Right. And even if they don't have a point guard, Javon Carter's gone. I don't see the team that can do it. The answer would be Kansas State, but
I agree.
I'm not sure Kansas State is going. I'm not going with 2 losses for Kansas State. So moving on. Duke lost Bagley, lost Carter, lost Allen, lost Gary Trent, lost Trayvon Duval. What that means, Gus, is they lost their starting 5, okay? The entire starting lineup. But he got number 1, number 2, and number 3. That's correct. He got the top 3 prospects that were ranked nationally by every ranking service. RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson, who, if you don't know who he is, just put him on Twitter. There's just dunks galore from the foul line, all this other stuff. Certainly very impressive.
There's stuff going between legs. Yeah,
yes.
That's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, yes.
Multiple colored sneakers.
I have to tell you, knowing me as you do, I'm warming to Zion Williamson.
I know you're warm. Yeah.
So listen, is this going to be the same old for Duke? Or is this going to be the year? Is Krzyzewski going to put it together? The thing Krzyzewski has not done is he has not taken, since he's gone to this, I'm recruiting all freshmen and all the ones and dones, and until he's, you know, sort of dipped his foot into the Calipari waters, he has not gotten to a well Final said. Four or a national title. So, Gus,
okay,
could this be the year for them to make the Final Four national title? Is he going to just cement his legacy as the greatest coach ever with a title with pretty much all freshmen?
You want the answer?
Yes.
Listeners, you want the answer? Nope.
Okay. I'm kind of with you, man. I'm with you, too. Go ahead. Do it.
Gonna happen.
Good.
Here's why it's not gonna happen. There's multiple reasons. Number one, like you mentioned, Coach Krzyzewski is an unbelievable coach. He has multiple national titles. He has multiple gold medals. He is one of the top coaches in sport. Period. End of sentence. Not in basketball, just in sport. However, he has not shown the propensity to find success with this type of group of
athletes.
That's
correct. Yes. Yeah.
Here's the other limiter for this particular team. Who's going to shoot it? You got a shooter that can stretch the defense for these guys?
Mm-hmm.
You got somebody that can get a shot out in the corner when the defense breaks down and you're looking for that, 3 seconds to go on the shot clock and you need to kick it out to somebody? You're going to kick it out to anybody that's going to make a shot? I mean, they got kind of spoiled with Grayson Allen. They got kind of spoiled that, Bagley could shoot a little bit. Carter could shoot a little bit.
Yep.
I mean, and if you go back to his best teams, there's no Matt Jones on this team. There's no John Shire on this team. Mm-hmm. There's no Emile Jefferson on this team. Somebody that he can just bank on that's going to provide effort, hustle, and get after it, for lack of a better term. Yep. There's not one of those people on this team.
That's correct.
So I think the things that this team is missing and the things that this team has is not the recipe that Coach Krzyzewski has shown that he can coach well and find success with. So to answer your question a little long-winded but then also succinctly, the answer is nope.
I'm concerned about it. I want to see it. Listen, the Duke defenders are going to say, we were a rolled Grayson Allen layup away from making the Final Four.
True.
You were. But, I mean, you also had a pretty decent trip there through the bracket. But I'm with you. Right now I'm leaning no. But that's just my thought. But certainly it's going to be exciting. The next one I'm certainly most excited to talk about, and probably you are too, Nevada.
Yeah.
They get Jordan Brown, five-star player going to Nevada. Just doesn't happen, but I'm glad it does. They got Caleb and Cody Martin back. They got Caroline back. They are loaded. They got five of their top six scorers back. They won 29 games last year and made the Sweet 16. We got Eric Musselman. There's mojo going on. They had the big comeback against Cincinnati. Just incredible job. I love Nevada. They're going to be my preseason one, I'm going to tell you right now. However, Gus, is it going to hurt them that they're playing in the Mountain West? Is it going to hurt them that they don't play the highest level of competition? They'll have some great, out-of-conference games, but can they really do it? Or was this just a magic carpet ride this year that's tough to repeat?
Number one, can they do it? Depends on what you want them to do. Do you want them to get a number one seed in the tournament?
Final four.
Number one, you talked about their schedule. Who cares if they have a number one seed? Do you think they have the talent to get to the Final Four?
I certainly do.
Yeah, so do I. So I think, schedule unimportant. If they get a one seed, a two seed, a three seed, a four seed, or a five seed, it doesn't matter. Yes, is it a limiter and maybe something that can hurt them in the seeding process come March by being in the conference that they're in? Sure. Did they schedule up and try to give themselves opportunity in the non-conference schedule by following up with TCU and so on and so on? Yeah, that of course. Is it the end of the world that maybe they don't get a number one seed in March and people are going to be begging and screaming for them like, oh, you left out the little guy again? No, it doesn't matter because they have enough talent and they have a coach that can get all of that done. Now let's go to your magic carpet ride question, right? Was it a magic carpet ride? I'm going to say no. And here's why it wasn't. The answer is just a plain out flat no. When we talked to Chris Murray a couple of times on the podcast for your listeners, he prefaced the answer to how did they do this with, this is just what they do, and this is the type of environment that they live in. We can hit the rewind button 2 years now, and we can go back to one of the most unbelievable comebacks that's happened in college basketball within the 10 years, even 25 years. And guess who was involved in it? It was Nevada, and they were in the pit, and they were down 20 with under 8 minutes to go, and they came all the way back, won the thing in overtime. That's how this team operates. This team does the impossible regularly. This team operates uncomfortably, as comfortable as anybody can. That's what they do. And I don't think this team is going to be out of character at all because they have a similar cast of characters. You talked about how they bring back Cody and Caleb. They bring back Jordan Caroline. They bring back a couple of guys off the bench. They also have a couple of red shirts that are going to play. We talked about Nisri Zazu, who's a really shifty guard they're going to have. They're going to have Trey Porter. They're going to have a Jordan Caroline clone and Trayshon Thurman. So they have guys that have been on the bench, been on the practice team, that have taken this ride last year. So there's no reason to think they're going to do anything but something kind of unbelievable and knock our socks off at some point during the season. Let's just hope the time that they do that is in March again. So that's what I'm going to say about Nevada.
I think Nevada's my number one. I love them. I'm all in. They can get buckets at the end of the game when they need to. The Martin brothers are an impossible guard. They got Caroline inside, who's a Brahma Bull. Love the team. Love the mojo. Completely into them. But I'm curious because we like Duke, we like Kansas, we like Kentucky. We don't like Duke, but we like Kentucky, we like Kansas, we like Nevada. Gonzaga. Now, Gonzaga's finished in the top 25 in KenPom each of the last 7 years. They are incredible team. They are a national powerhouse. They are a legit top five team, top 10 team every single year. They have proven, because they were within a couple buckets of winning the national title 2 years ago, that it does not matter what conference they're in. So that is out for Gonzaga because they've had sustained success. I mean, we can go all the way back to Steve Nash, right?
So I think we can take them out of – I think we can start removing them from like the mid-major conversation.
Oh, yeah, they're gone.
And just start – talking about them as a perennial top 15, top 20.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no, they're a top 10 team every year.
Okay.
That's it. Case closed, period.
All right.
However, they did lose Jonathan Williams. They got Tilly back. They got Rui Hachimura, who I think is going to be first team All-American. We do our predictions. For All-American, I'm telling you right now, Hachimura is going to be a first team. I'm just going to tell you right
love
now.
Love that prediction.
Not
yes.
in your question. But the question is the guard play. They lost Tilly in that game against Florida State, but I have to be fair here. They probably shouldn't have been able to get past it, to be honest, with the type of season they had and their personnel. Do they have enough at the guard position? They're going to be great. They're going to be a top seed. They're going to be tremendous. They have a Hall of Fame coach, period. But at this point, if you're fly fishing with Mark Few, okay, he wants a Final Four.
If only, by the way.
You can't, you know what? We can't sit here, Gus, and tell the listeners that Gonzaga is now a top 10 team every year and say, well, if they make the Sweet 16, it's a good year. That's not true anymore. Because they've set the bar so high that they are now in the North Carolina and they're in that kind of discussion because they're great every year. So Few wants a Final Four. We want it for him. Certainly, you and I both do. Can they get back there, or are we all underestimating just how good Nigel Williams-Gus was?
Oh, that's a great last part of the question.
Because Gus was the focal point that year. Shemek was awesome. Shemek was cooking burgers. We know that.
Shemek was the man. Okay. Oh, my goodness.
But
yeah.
You know that Gus was the guy. I mean, in that championship game, he was the man, right? He can bring it up. He can shoot it. He can distribute it. He can get in the lane. I mean, he was the go-to guy. And I don't know if good old Josh Perkins can do that, man. What do you think?
So let's see. Let's go with the first one. Is getting to a Final Four good enough because they're in that conversation? I think the fact that they're in that conversation year after year after year, I mean, victory Gonzaga.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that they're included in the same conversation of Kansas. Just, like, listen to the order of the teams we talked about in this particular podcast. We talked Kansas. We talked Kentucky. We talked Duke. We talked, you know, our darlings in Nevada. And boom, here comes Gonzaga. So let's go to the second point. Do they have enough guard play? You know what? This year they do. Here's why. We've talked about with what the problem was with Kansas, right? We talked about how they're going to miss their senior guards and how that's going to be a limiter for that particular team. Guess what the Bulldogs do? They bring back not a senior, a fifth-year senior in Perkins, somebody that's been to a championship game, and if you remember correctly, scored double digits in the first half of the championship game against North Carolina. So it's not like he doesn't know how to get it done on the big stage. He does. Is he a little flighty sometimes? Is his question making sometimes questionable? Sure. Does he try to do too much in too small of a space sometimes? Yeah, absolutely. But he is a fifth-year senior. And if you have a fifth-year senior point guard with championship game experience, do you know how many teams have that in college basketball? You can probably count them on one hand. And Gonzaga has one of the guys. And let's throw into the mix. Oh, okay. We're going to throw in a late grad transfer, Geno Crandall from North Dakota. And if we take, you know, I talked about him on one of the podcasts, one of our private podcasts for Patreon listeners. If you're going to talk about an impact transfer, then you're going to talk about Geno Crandall, because he's basically single-handedly responsible for North Dakota's singular NCAA tournament berth with his performance 2 years ago in the championship game in the Big Sky when his team was down six.
Such an X factor. Could be such an X factor for them, absolutely.
So if you're looking for somebody to make a late-game play, Crandall is not afraid to make that play. And guess what? He's made that play before. You may think like, oh, what – like, it's not a big deal. It's just the Big Sky. It's not a big stage. How about if your team has never been to the NCAA tournament and you're in a hole? And he goes ahead and makes all the plays for that. So I'm a big fan of Crandall. I think he and Perkins in the backcourt are going to be killer. How about Zach Norvell Jr.? You know what he's going to do? He's going to absolutely explode this year. He showed flashes last year. He showed that he can take over games in halves. He showed that he can be the best player on the floor for this team. Yes, the best player on the floor, including Rui, including Tilly. So he can do things on the wing that they really haven't had before. And then you throw in Rui and Tilly, and they're two of the best bigs that college basketball is going to put their eyes on. You could probably find either one of those guys or both of those guys on an All-American team come season. And that wouldn't be outlandish at all. Put that all together, like you said, with a Hall of Fame coach. I think we're having the same conversation we had 2 years ago, where they're a legit threat to win the whole darn thing. And yeah, it doesn't hurt to have, as you said, a Hall of Fame coach. End of sentence.
Moving on to Virginia. The Virginia Cavaliers had the historic loss to Maryland Baltimore County, but without DeAndre Hunter. Now, great point. We should not forget that Tony Bennett's team was viewed as one of the best, if not the best team, heading into the start of the tournament. Seven of their top 10 players are back. And I believe that good things happen to good people. And Tony Bennett is too great a coach. And he's won way too many ACCs with less than great talent to go out like this. I do not think it ruins his resume at all. I think it's a bad upset. And I think he can erase it if they make a Final Four or they win a national title. They have Kyle Guy back. They have Ty Jerome back. They have DeAndre Hunter back. They have Mamadou Diaké back. Jack Salt is back. Okay.
I know you're excited about that last one.
He's only a junior, by the way. So
which is crazy. Isn't it crazy? Seems like he's been there forever.
The key question, can Tony Bennett's style make a Final Four at some point in this era of high scoring college basketball?
Yes. The simple answer is yes. It's gonna happen this year.
I'm with you, man. The Tony Bennett Redemption Tour. I'm telling you right now. Absolutely.
Look. You lead the charge on this, and I'm going to hop in on the boxcar right behind you, and I'm going to ride shotgun on this thing, because you were on board with this and saying that he is going to redeem the upset that was the king and queen and prince and princess of all upsets last year and absolutely define Cinderella. Okay? It was royalty to the tilt. He is going to absolutely flip the script this year and do the complete opposite, where everybody's going to pick against him in the tournament. Everybody's going to pick against him in that round of 32 or round
Virginia.
Of 16.
You can't bet on Virginia. Come on. You're going to pick Virginia. They're going to lose again in the first round. Chuckle, chuckle, snicker, snicker.
That's exactly what's going to happen. You know what he's going to do? He's going to snicker all the way to Minnesota. Here's why it's going to happen. Number one, he realizes what he needs to tweak. Is he going to give up the token and the trademark that is Virginia basketball, which is valuing possessions and really gearing up on D? No, he's not going to tweak that at all. Is he going to get a little bit more creative on offense with his three returning players that are, you know, all ACC players, quote, you know, slash all American type players with Jerome, Hunter, and Guy? Yeah, he might give them a little bit more freedom of what to do on offense and give them a green light a little earlier in the shot clock, because he values their decision making. So I am totally with you on this. I think this is the spot where he gets it right and everybody's going to be picking against him. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to look at everybody when he gets to Minnesota and be like, oh, hi, we're here. Guess we should have done this last year, but we're here now. So I'm with you on Virginia, man.
You're so great at making these comparisons and making these, you know, projections on who somebody plays like. And the reason that is because we've watched so much college basketball, right? We watch basketball in and out. We digest it. We love the tournament. What happens when you're old, when we're like 70 years old and our kids are calling us idiots that we don't know anything, is history repeats itself. I have seen so many upsets, so many situations like this Tony Bennett thing, maybe not to this level, where teams were dismissed and then they're vindicated. Tony Bennett is a superior coach. He's a Hall of Fame level coach with what he's done in Virginia and the ACC. He ain't going out like this. It's not happening. And when you bring back Jerome and Guy, I'm going to tell you, partner, the easiest bet to make next year. You wait to see who Virginia is playing in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and you bet $100 on the under for that game. You are going to have an easier time walking through a field of landmines blindfolded than you are scoring against Virginia in the first round next year. They're going to be so angry. Please remember this, listeners. Bet the under in whoever Virginia is playing. That score will be 40-10. Right. They will be so angry. It'll be unbelievable. That's all I'm telling you right now. Bet the mortgage.
If we go back 4 years, what are people saying about Jay Wright?
Exactly.
What are people saying about Villanova?
That's such a great point. Yes.
And now, 2, 3, 4 years right. later, 2 titles later, what are we saying about Villanova? Oh, it's the Villanova way. Oh, he develops his
walking
players.
Around
oh,
like Hank Iba. Right. Well, come on. Such a great point, man.
It is a very, very similar script. Are we predicting that UVA is going to have 2 titles in the next 3 years? No. Are we going to predict that they're going to flip their recent March shortcomings? Yes, we are.
So a great coach is bringing back his entire backcourt and 7 of his top 10 scores. Okay, that's fine. And Jack Scholl.
Okay. I think that works.
It's fine. A couple more left. Tennessee.
Yeah.
Now, listen, Tennessee returns their top 6 scores.
Including, I was going to say, talk about returning.
Right, top 6 scores, including the quietest SEC player of the year we've ever heard of in Grant Williams. Right?
No question.
No one talks about him. Acclaim.
If we ask, like, 10 college basketball fans, who is the SEC player of the year? Do you think 5 of them would get it wrong?
I think if you ask 10 random fans what team Grant Williams is on, I bet no more than 50% of them get it right. But Grant Williams, tremendous right, player. Okay. And by the way, bringing back, and I asked my wife if we could change my son's name, but she said no. Admiral Schofield is coming back, okay? He's got 2 great leaders. They have Kentucky. Auburn's a pain. We get that. But the question, Gus, is Rick Barnes. So Tennessee, not getting any pub. I think Gary Parrish had him 3 a month and a half ago. But sure. They're not getting the respect. SEC champs, regular season, 6 top 6 scores are back, and the SEC player of the year. Why aren't people buying Tennessee?
I think people are. I think people are putting them in the proper place preseason. However, I think if you were going to then ask those same people, whoever those people are, whether it be Gary Parrish or whoever the rankings are coming from, hey, who's in your Final Four? How many of those people do you think would have Tennessee in their Final Four?
Right.
So I think there's a little bit of discrepancy there as far as how people are grading, rating, and projecting Tennessee. I think people are putting them in the proper place in preseason polls, but then I also think they're on to what you mentioned here, which is like the Rick Barnes hesitancy of putting them far in the tournament due to his past results in the tournament, very not dissimilar from Tony Bennett. So let's just break down Tennessee for a little bit. You mentioned what they bring back. They got Lamont Turner, who was the 6th man of the year. Barnes was the coach of the year last year. You said Admiral Schofield, and they got Bone, who's in the backcourt as well. So it's not like they bring back suckers. These guys are like legit all SEC players.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What are they going to do with the term that's going to follow them around the entire season of defending SEC champs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not like last season where they were picked 10, 11,
right.
12.
Snuck up on people. Yes, correct.
What are they going to do now that they're defending champs? My guess is like early on, they might take a couple lumps because people have them in their bullseye, in their target. And I think that people are going to take them seriously. Now, once they get into SEC play, they're hardened up, they have a couple of losses, then I think in SEC play it's real. Then I think it's like legit, right? I think then we'll see the real Tennessee. So I think if we're going to answer the question of like how good is Tennessee, are we underselling them, do you buy in, why don't we answer that question once SEC play starts and they have that road game against Kentucky? They yep. have to go play Florida. Why don't we wait till then? And then I think we'll get a real answer. Is that fair?
We got this. Florida's in there too. Alabama. I think South Carolina's going to be better. Hopefully so my wife's not angry the whole year.
Sure.
But they 13-5 in conference, Gus. They tied Auburn, regular season title. Okay, remember they had that game against Villanova early on where they actually played mm-hmm. them pretty tough, which was kind of like, hey, hold on a second. They may be pretty good. Then they beat NC State. They lost 1 to North Carolina. They had a streak there where they lost to North Carolina, then they lost a couple games later to Arkansas, and then they lost to Auburn. That's why people cooled on Tennessee. But from that point, they beat Kentucky. They beat Vanderbilt mm-hmm. on the road, which is never yep. easy. They beat South Carolina on the road. They crushed Iowa State in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. They beat Kentucky again, so they beat them at home, yep. and they beat them on the road. And then they lost to him in the championship game. So they had a nice run, and they had Loyola Chicago, but they could not pull right. it out. Tennessee.
They lost the Darlings.
Yeah. They're going to be solid. They're a high-floor team next year. They're not getting a lot of respect. But the issue is Rick Barnes. And very quickly, what Rick Barnes has done is in career. He coached Mason for 1 year, did a nice job. Then he goes and gets the Providence yep. job. Makes a tournament, NIT, yep. doesn't make the tournament, NIT, makes a tournament for a third time. He bolts. He goes to Clemson. Goes to Clemson, NIT first year. Then he makes the round of 64, and here it is. 1996-97, they go 23-10 Clemson. They make the Sweet 16. That was the year. The next year, they go back to the tournament and lose. Then he bolts to Texas. And being at Texas – early on, they had some great success, had the Final Four in 2002, 2003. They had a couple yep. Elite Eights, 2005, 6, and 7, 8. Okay. Then it was a lot of round of 32, round of 64, round of 32, round of 64, CBI. That was a tough year, 2012, right. 2013. Then round of 32, round of 64, and that was enough. I mean, they basically went there roughly 8 years without making it past the round of 32. It's not going to happen in Texas when you have all those resources. And he went to Tennessee, right? Nothing big here. Bruce Pearl left the whole thing. So he goes from 12th to 9th to 1st. But the question is Rick Barnes a guy who takes bad teams to good, but not good teams to great? We'll find out.
How about this? He's the Buck Showalter of college basketball.
I love Buck Showalter. I know. I think he got such a raw deal.
Don't we all?
I love Buck. He got such a raw
deal. But how good is Buck Showalter
I know.
At getting crazy, at getting teams to be crazy competitive and right on the premises.
95, they're up 2-0 against Seattle in the playoffs, and I'm yelling right at the screen, there. Don't give up game three. Go for the he right saved Blackjack McDowell, who's giving up bombs left and right, but he got a Cy Young over Dave Stewart. Okay, we're moving on. Two more left for you, buddy, then that's it. North Carolina. Okay. North Carolina, listen. Roy Williams got 3 titles in North Carolina. Nobody talks about that. Who has more titles, Dean Smith or Roy Williams, North Carolina? The answer is Roy Williams.
It's a little crazy,
right? It's a little crazy. He's got 3. Okay,
that's a crazy answer just let it sink in.
Right. I'm not getting into the academic stuff because there's so much stuff we can go. I'm just sticking to basketball because we're talking basketball. Good, and we're not talking about the, July recruiting period. Okay, we're talking hoops. That's what people want.
All right. Can we – let's just spend 30 seconds on that. Ready? The change in recruiting period fixes nothing. It changes dates on calendars. And it takes power away and power away from college coaches and accountability away from families and sneaker companies because those college coaches aren't there. Because then when the college coaches are there, they have to follow the rules. Okay, we can move on. I think it's silly. It doesn't fix anything. It just makes things more complicated and has people changing their calendars. That's all.
My issue with this is Condoleezza Rice is a very smart person. And this committee that has been assembled to clean up college basketball, there's 2 ways you can make change. And Gus, you and I have gone through educational changes in our career here in New Jersey. Okay. There's 2 ways you can do it. You can put out a pilot. You can gather information from 5 million people. You can take that information. You can go back. You can have meetings. You can have more meetings. You can have meetings about the meetings that concern the meetings and try to change things. And then you can roll it out. Or what you can do, which is often sometimes easier, is just throw stuff out there and leak it out and see the reaction. So I want people to know this is a great group of people. Cleaning up college basketball is hard because it's tough controlling anything, professional or college or whatever. But they're going to get it right. They're going to figure it out. Maybe this wasn't the greatest suggestion, but they'll figure it out. These are smart people. Yeah. It's not easy, but I guarantee you this came from some good idea. There was a good reason to talk about this, and maybe it's not going to work, but these are smart people. It will get better. Just give them patience, and let's not jump down their throat. Okay, somebody leaked it. Maybe they leaked it on purpose, okay? And it wasn't a good idea. It's fine. It's fine. They'll go back and they'll fix it, okay? But if it was so easy, guys, we wouldn't have had everyone running rampant with Book Richardson and all these other people getting money and hotels with wires. Okay, whatever. Moving back to Roy Williams. Three times
in order. Great job steering it back. Well done. Okay, excellent.
The segue. It's all about the segue. The Roy Williams segue. There's the title of the podcast. So Roy Williams has three titles in his years. Gus, he's rarely had bad back-to-back years. I want to point that out. So this year, third in the ACC, round of 32. They won the title the year before. They were runner-up the year before. In 12, 13, 13, 14, he did have back-to-back round of 32 years, but that came off of back-to-back elite 8 years, okay? So old Roy usually does a pretty decent job. The only bad year he had was 2009, 2010, but oh, by the way, that came off a national title, okay? So my question is, is the ACC caught up to old Roy? Duke's got numbers 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 12, and 15 on their class, right? Florida State certainly seems like a pain in the rear. NC State's going to be good. Louisville, Syracuse, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with them. But the question is, has the ACC, and of course I didn't mention Virginia, have they caught up to old Roy? Or is old Roy going to circle back here with Luke May and company and kick everybody's fanny?
Okay. Again, I kind of like the way that you're phrasing these questions because it lets me and allows me to give succinct and then long-winded answers. Here's a succinct one. Oh, yeah. He's going to come back and kick some fanny this year. And is he going to circle the wagons? Oh, yeah, he is this year. He is not going to go out in the round of 32 this year, and he is not going to be an also-ran in the ACC under all the teams that you just mentioned. There is no doubt. He's got one more run in him, and guess what? That run starts this year. You mentioned the recruiting success that Duke has had with their recruiting class this past year. We mentioned the overall success that UVA has had in season, maybe just not in March. You mentioned some of the other strong teams, whether it be Syracuse, whether it be Louisville with Coach Mack in place, whether it be NC State with Coach Keats in place. You can go down a few other, you know, we mentioned Clemson with them making the tournament finally and finding some success. So UNC hasn't had a top-end player enter their program, and they've been one of those teams that's been allowed to quote-unquote stay old.
That's
like
correct.
One of the things that Pitt was very good at in the Big East, what Notre Dame always tries to do, and UNC has somehow like snuck into doing that even while remaining a blue blood. And you know what they did this year?
Meeks and Hicks. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And this past year, you know who was supposed to be there, but who wasn't, was Tony Bradley. He was supposed to have Tony Bradley
such a bad move.
Yeah, sitting next to Luke May to protect him and have some backup, and that didn't happen. And then he had to play Manley and Brooks, and Cam Johnson was a huge help. Don't get me wrong there. But, you know, Bradley was supposed to be there and be a huge impact big like UNC usually has. So Coach Roy did the same thing that Coach Cal did at Kentucky. He just used different ingredients. He changed the recipe. He went ahead and got Nasir Little, one of the highest-ranked freshmen that Coach Roy Williams has ever had.
It's a big one.
At UNC.
It's a big one.
It was a huge get. Now that the academic fog that you mentioned earlier in the lead up to UNC is gone and has passed, and now they can just concentrate on basketball, guess what? People are going to want to come play at UNC, and Nasir Little is just the first one that's going to want to come play there. So if you're going to throw Little next to May, and you're going to have Manley and Brooks be the bigs, I think the only question is who's going to run the show. UNC's offense is predicated by having a point guard that can get out, run things, and get that break going, and then have the secondary break, and then, you know, run things through that secondary offense. Who's going to be that guard that he trusts? They have every other position in place. Cam Johnson can stretch the floor as a shooter. Luke May has the potential to be like an All-America type player, at least an All-ACC, maybe even a player of the year type caliber type player. Who's going to be that point guard? I think that's my one question mark with UNC. But I tell you what, Little is going to do some pretty cool things for UNC, and they're going to have a flashback and be like, oh, yeah, I remember when we got players like this. I remember when we got Vince Carter. I remember when we had Rasheed Wallace. I remember that. I remember when we had Stackhouse. Little is kind of like one of those guys. He's an impact player that's going to wow you with a couple of plays and not just be slow, steady, and a winning player, much like Marcus Paige and Joel Berry were the past couple of years, who were unbelievable NBA-ish players that will win games on the college level, but Nasir Little is a little different level than those guards and those players. So I think, yeah, Roy Williams has one more run, and guess what? That run's going to start this year.
And the last team we'll get to, and then we'll wrap it up, partner, Oregon. Oregon reloaded after their Final Four trip, but they got some players, Gus. They got six newcomers. The big headliner guy is Bol Bol. All right. Now, Oregon is the second-ranked class.
You like Bol Bol.
I like him already. He's 7'2", okay. 235 pounds. He's going to wear number one at Oregon, by the way. They got sophomore Kenny Wooten, who's back. He gave up number one for Bol Bol. Okay. You got Lewis King, who's another five-star player from the 2018 class. He's coming in. He's 6'9", 205, forward who can do it all. They got freshman Miles Norris and Francis Okoro, who just signed with Oregon. Norris is 6'10". He's 210 pounds. Okoro, who's from Illinois, 6'9", 235. What is Dana Altman going to do? He's got Texas A&M grad transfer Ihab Amin, 6'4", 200 pounds. They got a ton of guys. Troy Brown left and got drafted in the first round. Good for him. But he certainly seems like he has a very stacked team. But Gus, he's got a very big team. Bol Bol, 7'2", Miles Norris, 6'10", Okoro, 6'9", Lewis King, 6'9", Paul White, 6'9", Kenny Wooten, 6'9". What are you going to do with Oregon?
Number one? You're not going to out rebound them.
You're going to box out.
You're not going to out rebound them. Even Washington with their zone isn't going to out rebound them. Number two, you know what they're going to do? They're going to put the ball in Peyton Pritchard's hands. And they're going to say, thank goodness we have Peyton Pritchard to run the show with all these bigs that have such a diverse skill set. Peyton Pritchard, I think, and this is going to be like the third or fourth reference that we've had with Frank Mason and Devontae Graham, and we'll throw Joel Berry into that mix too, and Marcus Paige. I think Peyton Pritchard could have a year that's on par with those guards. I think he could be that impactful. Maybe he's not going to score 20 points a game. I can see like 15, 16 points a game, but just that really efficient scorer, knows what he's doing on the floor, where Coach Altman can look at him and say, he's going to say, run our stuff. And then Peyton's going to go run their stuff, and Oregon's going to get a good score somewhere. You know what the one underrated thing? You said, like, things are cyclical, right? Like when we were talking about our UVA conversation.
Yep.
You know what might be something that's a little bit underrated and still has value in the college game? And we talked about this a couple of years back when UNC and Gonzaga met in the championship game, where both of them played with two bigs regularly and got easy scores and got paint touches to predicate their offense. I think Oregon's going to do a little bit of that. I think Oregon's going to follow a little bit of that blueprint, get some good paint touches, get some easy scores, and then put you on the defensive of trying to get scores to match, but get those scores against longer, taller, bouncier athletes. That sounds kind of like something that might work in the college game. Still, maybe not the NBA game, but I think the college game, I still think those paint touches and those easy scores have value, especially if you have a guard of Pritchard's ilk to go ahead and run things for you. I kind of like Oregon's recipe. And if you throw Amin in, Amin led the nation in steals his previous year at Texas A&M, where he averaged over three steals a game. If you throw him in the backcourt as a difference maker on the defensive end too, man, I don't know how you're going to score on these people with the length and then the quickness in the backcourt. I think it's going to be a real issue. So I kind of like what the Ducks have mixed up here, and I think Coach Altman is happy to have all those bigs and all that length on the defensive end and on the defensive boards.
Yeah, it's well said. I think Oregon is going to be a very interesting team. They're going to be different. I think it's going to be a tough matchup for teams, and I want to see how they play these small teams that run up and down the floor. Partner, I think that's a load of information here for our first podcast back.
I think so. I hope people are happy that we're talking college hoops. We just want to say, listeners, thank you out there. Thank you for letting us provide your college basketball fix during the off season. We're honored that you allow us to keep you company during your week or your weekend. So thank you for allowing the Screener College Basketball Podcast to do that. Hey, you like what you're listening to? Please thank the podcast this way. Go to Apple Podcasts. Go to your podcast rating machine that you listen to, however you consume podcasts. give us 5 stars, give us a nice rating, say some nice things about Mike because he's unbelievable, say some nice things about the podcast because you really like the information that you get here. We'd love to get a couple of off-season kind reviews. That'd be really cool. You like re-listen to, give the podcast a follow, of course, at SDS on Twitter, at the S Podcast on Twitter. We'd love to interact with you that way. Please give Mike a follow at Randall Rant. He is educational, insightful, and, of course, highly entertaining. Mike, is there anything else we want to share with the listeners out there?
It's just great to be back and talking some college hoops. And people say,
isn't it? It's nice, right?
Partner, people say it's a dead time. It's not a dead time unless you allow it to be so. So we're coming at you, folks. We got our patrons who are getting an extra podcast on Saturday morning, every Saturday morning, and we'll be giving you at least one podcast every single week. So sounds good, partner. Great to be back.
Yeah, very good to be back. Listeners, we'll hit you up next week. Mike and I'll be back. We'll talk a couple of other college basketball items. We'll give you some players. We'll give you some other teams that we're paying attention to. Cheers. Cilantro. Gratulatia. Arigato. Happy to share college basketball lead-up season. Thank you, guys.